So we are holding base on with Aleph fourth line. We talked yesterday about how in the first base of Mikdash there was a wall that separated the Kurdish from the Kurdish HaKadoshim. That wall is called the Amatraxin, where we said Traxin. Either Rashi says over here that it means that it's a combination of words that mean inside and outside, because it's because as we're gonna say it's a suffix, whether it belongs to the inside, to the Kurdish HaKadoshim, or to the outside, to the Kurdish. Tosfos had brought a different reason, that Trak means to close up, means to enclose, and Sin means the Luchos that were given at Har Sinai, so it means the wall that encloses the Luchos that were given, that encloses the Luchos. Anyway, in the first Beis HaMikdash, we said there was a wall. In the second Beis HaMikdash, instead of a wall, there were two curtains. According to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, we said there was only one curtain. And we said the reason was because the reason why they couldn't have a wall is because the ground floor of the second Beis HaMikdash was taller. It was 40 amos instead of 30, and a wall 1 amah tall wouldn't be able to stand to such a height. So the question is, why do we have two paroichases? So we said briefly, and now we're going to discuss in more detail, that the area that's enclosed by those two curtains, that 1 amah width, is a suffix which one it belongs to the Kodesh or to the Kodesh HaKadosh. So that's what Gemara says, Amar Rav Nosson, Amatraxin lo hichriu bo chachamim ikilifnim ikilachutz. The chachamim could not decide about the Amatraxin, whether it belongs to the inside, whether it has the kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or whether it has the kedusha of the Kodesh. So therefore, that's what we're saying, that in the second Beis HaMikdash, since they couldn't have a wall, then therefore instead they had to have two curtains enclosing an area of an amah width. And maskif la Ravina. So Ravina asks on that, my timer, why would there have been that suffix in the first place? Are you going to say, because when the pasuk describes the first Beis HaMikdash, it says the house which Shlomo built for Hashem, shishim ama orkoi, the length of it was 60 amos, the esrim rochbo, the width was 20 amos, or shloshim ama kaimase, and the height was 30 amos, which means, by the way, the ground floor. Now there were also there's a different pasuk in Divrei Yomim that says that the first Beis HaMikdash was 120 amos tall. So there's a couple of possibilities about it. One of them is that only the ulam, the entryway, was that tall, and the rest of it was much shorter. The other possibility is that there were upper floors above the ground floor. In the second Beis HaMikdash, we know there was a second floor, which was the same height as the first one. In the first Beis HaMikdash, there may have been a second floor, or maybe even several floors. So the pasuk describes that it was 60 amos long. Uchtiv, and then further on, the pasuk says, "Va'aboyim ba'ama hoya aboyis hu ha'heichal lifnoi." It says 40 amos long was the house, the building, which is the heichal, meaning the kodesh, in front of the kodesh hakadoshim. So okay, the heichal is 40 amos long. Uchtiv, and then the pasuk also says, "V'lifnei hadvir," and in front of the dvir, Rashi explains, is what we're calling in the Gemara over here the amatraxin, the 1 amah thick wall that separated the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and in front of that, meaning really behind it, lifnei, meaning further in from it, meaning the Kodesh HaKadoshim, esrim amah orach, the esrim amah roichav, the esrim amah kemasai, it was 20 amahs long, 20 wide, and 20 tall, which, by the way, before we get into, so what are we doing with the amatraxin? Tosfos refers to Rashi on the pasuk over there. That, didn't we just say the height was 30 amos? Why all of a sudden are we saying the height is 20 amos? So one answer is again, we said that the Beis HaMikdash had upper floors. So an answer could be 20 amos is up to the ceiling of the bottom floor, and then you have another 10 amos for then you have another 10 amos for a room above that. Then Tosfos brings a different explanation from the Gemara in Bava Basra, that the 20 amos height we're talking about over here is counting from the top edge of the Kruvin. You have, besides the kruvim that were attached to the kapodos on top of the Oren, which are described in Parshas Truma. Besides that, Shlomo made two very large kruvim out of wood plated with gold that stood on the floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they were 10 amos tall. So from the top edge of them, so in other words, if you look at how much of a cube of empty space was there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then the answer would be 20 by 20 by 20, because once you get above those kruvim, above those wooden kruvim, then you have 20 amos more of space from there until the ceiling by 20 by 20. So in other words, it wouldn't be the total height of the room, where according to that was 30 amos, but 20 amos of it was empty space above the kruvim. There are different mephoshim talk about different other possibilities. Maybe what it is maybe the height of the heichel, maybe the height of the Kodesh was 30 amos, and then the height of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was only 20. Maybe the roof, maybe the ceiling was lower in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Whatever the case, we're not really getting into that right now. The Gemara is not focusing on that. The Gemara is focusing more on the length of the building. So far, what are we saying? That the total length of the building, it sounds like, was 60 amos. Then 40 of it is the Heichel, meaning the Kodesh, and 20 amos of it is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, the problem on the face of it would be v'lo yadinan amatraxin imehani esrim v'imehani aboim. So now the question would be the amatraxin, does it belong to the 40 or does it belong to the 20? 40 plus 20 equals 60. So on the face of it, then, you would have to assume it means from the beginning of the Heichel till the end of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 60 amos. So what is it? Is it 39 of Heichel, 1 of amatraxin, and 20 of Kodesh HaKadoshim, or is it 40 and 1 and 19? Well, if that's the whole problem, says Ravina, then what's the problem? The Dilma loy mehani esrim v'loy mehani aboyin. Maybe the amatraxin is not part of the 40 or the 20. It says 60 amos. V'chalala kachoshiv, kostam le kachoshiv. The pasuk, when it says 60 amos, is not talking about the full length from the beginning of the Kodesh to the end of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's talking about the empty spaces, the actual sizes of the rooms. 40 plus 20 equals 60. In other words, if you were to measure from the beginning of the Kodesh until the end of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it would be 61 amos. The pasuk says 60. It means 60 amos of space, not counting the walls. And Ravina says, Teda, after all, you can demonstrate that. Whenever in a description of the Beis Mikdash we mention the walls, choshev leilid yidei, then they count the thickness of the walls separately from the spaces between the walls. So therefore, the same thing over here. When the pasuk is saying 60 amos, it just means the total amount of space was 60 amos. The Tnan, and we see that because we have a Mishnah in Midas where it describes the Heichel in the second Beis Mikdash, and the Mishnah phrases it ha Heichel Meya al Meya Berum Meya. The Heichel, and here we mean the Heichel, the whole building was 100 by 100 amos, by a height of 100 amos. Now we said before 60 amos, but what it is once we have to count in also, as we're going to see, we're going to break it down. You have also. Here we're only going to deal with the east-west dimension, but you also have, besides the 60 amos of the Heichel of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you also have the Ulam, the entryway in front of it. You have, as we're going to say, the thickness of the walls. You have the Toyim, the little chambers, the little side chambers that surrounded the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So once you add all those in, then you get to 100. And the Mishnah breaks it down. Kosel Ulam Chomish, the front wall of the Ulam, of the entryway into the Heichel, was 5 amos thick. Vaha Ulam Achas Esrei, then the width of the Ulam from east to west was 11 amos. So far we have 16. Kosel HaHeichel Sheish, then the wall that separated the Ulam from the Heichel is another 6. So far we're 22. But Orkoya Boim Amma, the length of the Heichel of the Kodesh itself is 40 amos. The Amatraxin, then you have the Amatraxin, which again in the second Beis Mikdash they didn't have a wall over there, they had the two parochuses. The Chof Amma base Kodesh HaKadoshim, then 20 amos is the length of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, again from east to west. kosel ha-heichel sheish. Then you have the back wall of the heichel 6 amos thick. Va-tar sheish. The tar, there was a side chamber behind it that was 6 amos wide. So you had all around the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there were these little side chambers. They had three layers of them, a ground floor, a middle floor, and an upper floor. Each one of them, in the second Mesa Mikdash, you had 38 such chambers, because you had 11, you had 11 on the ground floor, You had 13 on the ground floor and 13 on the next floor above that and 12 above that. So altogether 38. What they used them for is not very clear. They may have used them for storage, like of the treasures of the Beis Hamikdash, or we don't know. Or they may have used them as offices. We really don't know. Whatever the case, that tar is 6 amos wide. The kosel atar chamish, and then the back wall of that, which is also the back wall of the whole building, chamish is 5 amos. So when we add together all the figures over here, 5 and 11 is 16, and 6 is 22, and 40 is 62, the amatraxin is 63, Kodesh HaKadoshim brings us to 83, Kosel HaHechol Sheish is 89, the Tah is 6, so 95, and Kosel HaTah Chamesh is 100. So the same way over there as we're mentioning the thicknesses of the walls separately and the thickness and the widths of the spaces between the walls separately. The same way you could say when the Pasuk describes about the first Beis Hamikdash and it says 60 amos, doesn't mean 60 amos from end to end. It means 60 amos of space plus whatever you have for the walls between one space and the next. So what's the suffix? And the answer is, you're right. The question isn't how to understand the pasuk, but the question is, after all, you have the kedusha of the kodesh. There's the kedusha of the kodesh hakadoshim. Which one of those kedushas does this amatraxin have? Is it that you have 40 amos of kodesh, and then you have an additional amma which also has the kedusha of the kodesh before you get to the 20 amos of the kodesh hakadoshim? Or is it the other way around? Is it that this area is you have 40 amos of kodesh, then you have the amma traxin is already considered to have the kedusha of the kodesh hakadoshim? So because of that suffix is why they had the two parochasim. Tosfos, by the way, deals with a point over here. In the Mishnayos in Midas over there, and also in the Pesukim in Melachim, it describes how actually we said that there were three levels of these toyim around the heichel, and actually each one was a different width. The bottom one was 5 amos wide. The second one, the middle floor was 6 amos wide. The top one was 7 amos wide. What they did is they had the wall of the heichel. The wall of the heichel was indented. Now, the normal way when you're building toyim, when you're building side chambers like that around a main building, would be that you'd every so often in the wall of the main building, you'd have holes in the wall in which you'd place beams, and then those beams form the floor of one tar and the ceiling of the next one. They didn't want to do that. They didn't want to do that with the Beis Hamikdash. Here Tosfos says the reason is because eventually the ends of the beams stuck in holes over there in the wall are going to rot away. Other Mephoshim give a reason that it wouldn't really be respectful to make the wall of the Heichel in such a way that it has holes in it for other things. So therefore, what they did was they had the wall got progressively narrower as it went up. So on the you'd have on the bottom, then it's wider. Then you have once you reach a height of 5 amos, which is the height of these toyim, then it would be indented 1 amma, and that gives you kind of like a shelf to place the ends of the beams on for the ceiling of that tar and the floor of the next one. Then the wall goes up from there, a certain thickness. Then eventually another 5 amos up, it indents yet again. And they did that 3 times, 3 indents like that, so that, and then on each indent, they could place the ends of the beams for the toyim. So So Tosfos is bothered by the question then, why over here when we're saying that the ta, it said we're saying that the wall, we're talking about the wall of the Heichel is six amos wide, the ta itself is six amos wide. Why are we saying that? Depending on what level of toyim you're talking about, you can be talking about that it's five, six, or seven. So Tosfos just mentions that maybe all it is okay. Listen, you know, we want to given that the eastern wall of the Heichel we said was six amos wide, and on that side there's no toyim, then we want to keep it consistent and speak of the back wall as being six amos wide as well, even though in fact the width of it was variable in different places. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss various other possibilities. Maybe actually what it is instead of an indent, and maybe also instead of the wall of the Heichel being indented an amma at each level, maybe it's only indented a half amma, and then the wall on the other side is indented only a half an amma. So therefore, so you have the higher toyim are still wider. Anyway, Tosfos gets into a very long discussion of exactly how it's arranged, how exactly these toyim are arranged, and why they did it this way, and so forth. Some of the mepharshim, I think, for example, the Tosfos Yishanim say like this: the Mishnah in Midas tells us that the Heichel had a base called the Mishnah calls it oitim, which literally means a sealed up area six amos tall. In other words, the building had a foundation, and then the foundation was a solid slab six amos thick, and then above that you had the Heichel and all of these various side chambers. So therefore, now the Tosfos Yom Tov says therefore what it may be is that the lowest level of the toyim was the floor of them was flush with the ground. Therefore, it comes out that the lowest level of toyim, given that each ta is five amas tall, then it comes out that the height, the complete height of the lowest ta was actually below the ground, below the floor level of the Heichel, and therefore that might be why the Mishnah over here is talking about the middle level, which was in fact six amas tall, because when we start talking about when we look at the level of the ground floor of the Heichel, then in fact the ta is six amas wide at that point. If you were to go further down, until you're at the point opposite the slab, the six amma thick slab, then you'd be in the bottom toe. Okay, whatever the case, the point is that the question is not how to understand the psukim. The question about the amma traxin is what is the din of it? So going back to the Gemara, v'hainu de amar Rabbi Yochanan. This fits with what Rabbi Yochanan says. Boy Yosef ish hutzel. Yosef from Hutzel, Hutzel is the name of a city in Babel, asked the question, what is the about a posuk, another posuk in Malachim over there that talks about the dvir, which again, we said the dvir is the amatraxin, the wall that separates the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now the posuk goes, udvir b'secha bayis mipnima, a dvir inside of the house, heichin, he prepared, to place there the Aron of the covenant of Hashem. So now Yosef Ish Hutzel was wondering, he had the question, what does the Pasuk mean? Where does the word Mipnima belong in the Pasuk? Is it Udvir Besechabayis Mipnima Heichin Lesitin Sham? Is it that the Pasuk goes, a Dvir inside the house? Within from that dvir is the place that was prepared for the Aron. So that would mean, in other words, that the place further in from that, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, is the one that has the highest kedusha. But the dvir itself would not be, only mipnima, only further in than the dvir would have that kedusha, but not the dvir itself. Or duma hachikama or dvir b'secha bayis mipnima. Or maybe the pasuk means, maybe mipnima belongs to the first half of the pasuk. And it means udvir b'secha bayis mipnima. The dvir that was within the dvir that was in the house was of the inside, meaning that belongs to it and has the din. It has the status of the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And that area is designated, and that area and the area further in from it is designated for the Aron. So that's essentially the question. So fine, when it came to, we said before, 60 amos, that we don't have a problem. The 60 amos just means the 40 plus the 20, and we're not counting the wall at all. But here, where the pasuk uses on the dvir, the word mipnima, so what does it mean? Does it mean that the Kodesh HaKadoshim is only the area mipnima, further in than the dvir? Or does it mean that the dvir itself is considered to be part of the area on the inside? So the Gemara says, "Umi masakdele, are you telling me that Yosef ish Hutzal had that suffix? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, Isi ben Yehuda Omer. Isi ben Yehuda says, and we're going to explain on Amud Beis that Isi ben Yehuda and Yosef ish Hutzal are two names for the same person. So he says, Chomish mikrois batora ein lahen hechra. There are five psukim in the Torah where there's no way, there's a certain word in each one of those psukim where there's no way to tell which part of the sentence it belongs to. And this one, this mifnima over here that we're talking about, is not one of them. What are those five? The first one is se'es. In Parshas Bereishis, when the Kayin is disappointed, Hashem accepted Hevel's korban, he didn't accept his. So Hashem tells him, "Haloi im teitiv se'es, v'im loy seitiv la pesach chatas roivitz." Now, there's two ways of understanding. It can mean, "Haloi im teitiv, isn't it true that if you do good, se'es, then your averus will be forgiven?" Se'es, in that case, is like noise oven rafesha. Or the other possibility is that it goes with the second half of the pasuk, se'es, v'im loy seitiv, you're going to bear your guilt if you don't do good. Tosfos Yeshanim says in that case, the vav is extra, because then it would be se'es imloy seitiv. But okay, still, there is the possibility that the word se'es over there, instead of meaning forgiving, being forgiven for the aveda, may actually mean to bear the aveda and the consequences of it. So that's the first one. The second one, mishukodim, the second one is, the pasuk says about the menorah, on the menorah, meaning on the main shaft, on the middle branch of the menorah, there were four gvim, four of those cup-like decorations, not the cups of the menorah where they placed the oil into, but the decorations, the cup-shaped decorations that were on all the branches. So there were four of those on the main stem of the menorah, and the pasuk continues, mishukodim, decorated with almonds. In other words, the gold was hammered out in such a way that you had a pattern of little almond shapes all over it. Kaftereho uprachecha, and then you have its knob decorations and its flower decorations. So the point is, does Mishukodim refer back only to the Gviim? So therefore, only the Gviim have to be decorated with those Ammon shapes, but the others, the Kaftereh and Pracheha, don't? Or is it the Mishukodim actually refers to all of them, and all of them have to be decorated that way? So that's the second one where you have the suffix. The third one is, which as far as that Mishukodim, by the way, now, the Rambam paskins that all of them are Mishukodim. And the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam say that the reason for that may be based on what we're saying in the Gemara over here. Given that it's uncertain which part of the pasuk the word Mishukodim belongs to, then therefore the Rambam Mitzad HaSafik said that all of them should be decorated that way. Different Noisa Kalim on the Rambam talk about that and have a bit of difficulty with that. There is a Sicha in Chelet Chavav where the Rebbe resolves it and says, just like all the other ones over here, Se'es and the other ones that we're going to mention, the only nafkamina of them, lahalacha, is how we read the pasuk, how we apply the trup to the pasuk, and we'll talk about that in a minute, actually, because after all, we have the trup on these, and we should be able to see what they belong to that way. But in any case, with all of them, there's not really a nafkamina in halacha. Therefore, says the Rebbe, that Rambam may have understood that here also with Mishkadim, it's not a nafkamina in halacha. The requirement is that all of them should be Mishukodim. And the question is just, how is the pasuk phrasing it? Anyway, that's the second one. The third one is Mochar. The third one is a little bit earlier in Chumash. And Tosfos actually wonders why they're listed out of order. Anyway, the third one is Mochar. by the war with Amalek at the end of Parashas B'Shalach, where Moshe tells Yoshua, "B'char lanu anoshim, choose people for us, choose men for us for the battle." But say he lochem ba'amalek and go. But say he lochem ba'amalek, mocher anochi nitzav al rosh agiva, and go fight against Amalek. Mocher tomorrow anochi nitzav al rosh agiva, I will be standing on the hill over there and davening. So is it that Moshe is telling Yoshua, go to war against them tomorrow? So is it Vitsehi Lochem Ba'amolek Mocher, go fight against them tomorrow? Or is it Sehi Lochem Ba'amolek, go fight Amolek now, and Mocher tomorrow on Nechinitza Baruch Shagiva, I'll be standing on the hill and davening. Today you don't need my tefillah. Tomorrow, if the battle continues tomorrow, then you will. So that's the Mocher. The fourth one is back in Parashas Vayechi, Orur. This one is actually at the end, at the beginning of a pasuk, which on the face of it, how are we saying then that we don't know what pasuk it belongs to? So again, let's finish the list of the five of them, and then we'll talk about that. So the fourth one is the word Orur, namely when Yaakov called together his children before he passed away, and he's giving them brachas, and in the case of Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, he's criticizing what they did wrong. Then he says, Shimon and Levi, he says, Kiva apam horgu ish, in their anger, they killed a man, referring to when they destroyed Shechem. Ubirtsonam ikru shur, and in their willfulness, they uprooted an ox. Then the next pasuk begins, Orr, cursed, and continues, apam ki oz, their anger because it's fierce. So, what is it? Does the word Orr belong to the end of the previous pasuk? And therefore, we would read it, Ubirtsonam ikru shur Orr, with their willfulness, they uprooted the ox of the ones who are cursed, meaning in that case, then it would refer to the oxen of Shechem, where Shechem is the descendant of the people of Shechem, and the prince Shechem over there are descended from Canaan, and the pasuk says, Orr Canaan. So therefore, it would mean, in other words, that he's saying that the ox of the ones who were cursed, then Shimon and Levi destroyed that, the oxen in general, in other words. Or does the word order be, and then the next pasuk would continue. And then the next pasuk would continue. Apam ki oz, their anger, because their anger is fierce, etc. Or is it that the pasuk says, "Sonam ikrusher," with their willfulness they uprooted an ox, finished. And then the next pasuk says, "Order apam ki oz, cursed is their anger because it's fierce." So which is it? And the last one is become. The last one is in the last one is in Parshas Vayelech, where Hashem tells Moshe, "Hincha shoychev im abeisecha." Hashem says, "Behold, you will lie with your fathers." In other words, you're going to pass away soon. Then become and rise up. This people will stray after the various getchkes of the nation. So what is it? You will lie with your fathers, and then at some point after you pass away, then this people will arise and stray after the idols. Or is it? You will lie with your fathers and rise up. So therefore, this is one of the places where there's a remez on Tchias HaMesim in the Torah. And then the pasuk would continue, that the nation, the Jewish people, are going to stray after the idols of the nations. So does the word become belong to the first half of the pasuk or to the second? Now, with some of these, it seems a little hard to say that the word should belong. So first of all, you have the question like this. Don't we have the truck? You look at, for example, the first one, the first one, se'es. If you look at the truck on the pasuk, it's very clear that the word se'es belongs to the first half of the sentence. Haloi imtativ se'es. The truck over there are haloi imtativ, are mapach pashta, and then se'es is a zakif cotton. A zakif cotton is one of the stronger separating truck. You have the truck have different levels of separation. But the zakif cotton is one of the second level. It's a fairly strong one. So obviously that means that the word se'es belongs to the words before it. And the same thing with all the other ones. With mishukadim, you have before it, there's an asnachta. With the word mocher, also you have an asnachta before it. And so forth. With oru, you even have a sof pasuk before it. So the Ritva says, right, what the Gemara means is not that once we look at the Trup, we don't know how to read these psukim. Once we look at the Trup, obviously, it makes it very clear how to divide up these psukim. What it means is, without looking at the Trup, just looking at the words themselves, we would have no way of knowing how these psukim break down. Tosfos seems to say that not. When it comes to Meshukodim, at least Tosfos says the reason why Ein Lo Hechra is because even though it's true that the word before it has an asnachta, but on the other hand, for example, so therefore that would imply that Meshukodim Kaftereo Pracheha, it would imply that everything, the Kaftereo and Pracheha, have Shkedim. But on the other hand, you have the previous Pasuk, says Shloshet Gvim Meshukodim, says three Gvim that have Ammon shapes on them, and therefore it can be Ein Lehem Hechra, not from within the Pasuk itself with its Trup, even with the Trup, we still have that Suffolk, and therefore the other ones conceivably could be the same thing. Also, Tosfos goes on to point out, sometimes we say that when you have an ambiguous word in the pasuk like that, then it actually goes with the part before it and the part after it. We actually had an example of it earlier in our Masechta, where we had the word, the Torah told us ufoshat, that the Kohen Gadol should take off his set of Bigdei Kohanah, and it said the lovash, and then he puts on, and verochats, and then he washes his hands and feet, the lovash, and he gets dressed. And we said that the verochats actually refers to both of them. So we said that ufoshat verochats, verochats velovash. We said that he takes off the clothes. He does kiddush adayim raglayim. Or, okay, we had a machlokas over there, which comes first, the taking off the clothes or the kiddush adayim raglayim. But whatever, we have a kiddush adayim raglayim. Then he gets dressed and does another kiddush adayim raglayim. So therefore, the verochats refers to both of them. Why don't we say the same thing over here? The word se'es refers to both. The word mishakodim refers to both and so forth. And Tosfos says that the Gemara couldn't have done that because over there, at least, the word verochats has the same meaning no matter what we apply it to. Verochats means any washes. Whereas over here, we're talking about in each of these cases, the word is going to have in many of these cases, the word is actually going to have a different meaning. In the case of se'es, for example, if we understand it, that it goes with the first part, haloyim tetiv, then it means forgiving. If you understand it to go with the second half, then it means not forgiving, but bearing the avera and the consequences of it. In the case of Vekum, is it referring to the people getting up and doing Avedos, or is it referring to Moshe getting up at Tchias HaMesim, and so forth with some of the others? When it comes to Mochar, either way, it means tomorrow. But again, is it referring to when the war is taking place, or is it referring to when Moshe is going to Davin? That's a big difference. As far as Meshukodim, again, because you have a different pasuk that seems to imply that only the Gvim are Meshukodim, then therefore that's what gives us the doubt. Anyway, the point is, so Isi ben Yehuda is telling us that you have five psukim over here where it's uncertain how to read the pasuk. So Vahatanya, and we learn in a Braisa. So you're going to say, okay, so Isi ben Yehuda has that problem. Fine. The original question about the word Mipnima in the Pasuk in Malachim is from Yosef Ishhutzel. So fine, what does one have to do with the other? No, Vahatanya, we learn in a Braisa. Who Yosef Ishhutzel? Who Yosef Ababli? Who Isi ben Yehuda? Who Isi ben Gur Aryeh? Who Isi ben Gamliel? Who Isi ben Mahalalel? So he had all these different names. Umashmoy, what's his real name? Isi ben Akiva Shmoy. His real name is Isi ben Akiva. Now, why did he have all these different names? Well, Isi is a nickname for Yosef as far as these various things. So, okay, Yosef Ishhutzel tells us where he's from. Hutzel is a city in Babel. Yosef Ababli is the same thing because Hutzel is in Babel. The other ones, Yehuda, Gur Aryeh, Gamliel, Mahalalel. So Marashar explains how each of them represents some other quality of his, and therefore he goes by all those names. Some of them approach him, say what it was is he lived at a time when there were persecutions of Jews going on, and therefore he had to run away, and every time he ran away to a different place, he had to change his name. So therefore he went by all those different names. Whatever the case, the point is that we see that Yosef Ishhutzel, which is the first one on the list, is the same as Issi ben Yehuda, which is third on the list. So therefore, they're the same person. So only these five psukim, seis, mishul kodim, etc., does he have a suffix where we put a word in the pasuk. And by the way, as far as odor, again, we could say that it means that maybe it means they weren't so expert always at knowing where one pasuk ends and the next one begins. So conceivably, there could have been a debate about whether the word odor actually belongs to the previous pasuk or to the next pasuk. Again, according to the Ritva, not necessarily. What it means is without the Turup, we would have no way of knowing. But once we have once we look at the Turup, then we know. Another possibility is there are some rare cases where usually we always say that a soif pasuk ends a sentence and ends a thought, but there are actually some places where a sentence continues into the next pasuk. Even though you have a soif pasuk, nevertheless there are still places. Actually, Rashi mentions such a thing on the first Rashi in Bereshis. Rashi brings one possibility that the first three psukim of Chumash Bereshis are actually all one long sentence. Bereshis bara lekim es hashamayim es haaretz, in the beginning of Hashem's creating of the heavens and the earth, when v'ha'aretz ha'is ha'sayu v'avayu, the earth was toru v'avayu, etc., etc., then v'yomer lekim he heard, then Hashem said, let there be light. So you have possibilities sometimes that a soif pasuk does not necessarily mean the end of a sentence. So therefore, so the same thing over here, it could be that the word order is like that. Anyway, again, the question is that he says only these five. Tosfos Yeshanim refers to a Yerushalmi that mentions a sixth one, but whatever. The point is the word mipnima from the pasuk in Melachim that we mentioned before is not on this list. So why would Yosef Ish Hutzel who is the same as Issi ben Yehuda, have a suffix in it? The answer is b'deraisa leka b'dinvi ika. According to Yosef Ish Hutzel, in the Torah itself, there are only those five. In other places, in Nach, sure, there could be other ones. The pasuk would vir b'seich habayis mipnima is in Melachim, which is in Nevi'im. So fine, that's not part of his list. He's listing only places in Chumash where you have an ambiguous word like that. Okay, the question still is, still, you're telling me there are no other places in Torah where there's an ambiguous word. What about the one that Rav Chista asked about? Before Matan Torah, at the end of Parashas Mishpatim, it says, Vayishlach es narei b'nei Yisrael, Moshe sent the young men of the Jewish people. These are the Bechorim, because this is before the Chet Egel, so the Bechorim were still doing the Avodah. Vayalu oil. So the pasuk goes like this. The Vayishlach es narei b'nei Yisrael, he sent the young men of the Jewish people, Vayalu oilus, and they brought oilus, Vayizbechu zvachim shlomim l'Hashem, and they offered korbanos of shlomim to Hashem, parim, bulls. So the question is, what does that mean? Does the bulls refer back to all of them? Vayalu oilus, when it says they brought oilus, then it would mean kvasim, it would mean that they brought sheep as oilus, in which case the oila that we're talking about over here would actually be the korban tamid. And by Yizbuchu Zvachim Shlomim Parim, and then when it continues that they brought Shlomim, those were bulls. Oidoma Aidi Vaidi Parim. Or maybe both, maybe what the pasuk means is maybe the Parim refers back to all of them, and it means they brought Oilus and they brought Shlomim of bulls. Which Rashi says, again, the Nafkamina would be, how do we break up the pasuk? Where do we put the Asnachta? If we put the Asnachta on the word Oilus, then it means that the oilers are something else, and then vayizbuchu zvachim shlomim l'Hashem parim, and the parim are only the second kind of korban, the shlomim. On the other hand, if we say that the word parim refers back to the oilers as well, then you wouldn't have an asnachta on the word oilers. Rashi says you'd have a gerish, meaning what we call an azla from a kadma of azla, or maybe a gershayim on the word oilos in order. Now that's a separating chirup, but it's a weak separating chirup, and therefore it would connect with the rest of the pasuk. So there you have also what is an ambiguous word in the pasuk, what the word porim refers to. So the answer is the answer is, yeah, that's Rav Chista has a doubt about that. But Issi ben Yehuda has no doubt. He had a Kabbalah how to understand that pasuk that didn't have that ambiguity in it. So he doesn't have it in his list, whereas Rav Chista had to add it because he wasn't sure about it. Okay, anyway, the bottom line is that you, the bottom line is that that Yosef Ish Hutzel, or to call him by one of his other names, Isi Ben Yehuda, is uncertain about the word Mipnima, that in connection with the Dvir, in connection with the Amatraxin, does it mean that the Amatraxin itself belongs to the area Mipnima, or does it mean that only the area Mipnima, further in from it, is the Kodesh HaKadoshim? That's the suffix, and that's why there was the suffix whether that Amma is part of the Kodesh or part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and therefore in the second Bais Mikdash, since they couldn't have a wall, then they had to have, according to the Chachamim, two curtains over there with a space of an amma between them. And again, we said, according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, there was only one curtain, either because Rabbi Yossi has no suffix, either as Tosfos says, because Rabbi Yossi has no suffix, or because he holds that it's fine, that it's fine as long as the outer edge of the as long as the outer edge of the curtain marks off the area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, fine. So now that we discussed that, now we're finally going to get the Kohen Gadol into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, after 50-odd blot of buildup, we're finally reaching the climax over here where the Kohen Gadol is going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. I think it's interesting, by the way, we talk about, you know, Yom Kippur has a certain association with the number five. It's the only day we have five tefillahs. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea that each of those five tefillahs corresponds to one of the five levels of the neshama. Ne'ilah corresponds to Yechida. And here also we have the Kohen Gadol is going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the Yechida of the Beis Mikdash. So maybe that's why the description now of the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is in the fifth perek of the Masechta. Anyway, the Mishnah says, "Hachitzona hoisa prufa min adorim." Now, according to the Chachamim, that there were two curtains, then the outer one, the one that was facing towards the Heichel, was pinned up from the south side. So what does it mean, pinned up? Rashi described what they did is they had the end of the curtain, instead of going all the way to the wall, it was bent backwards, and it was bent backwards, and it was held in place with a golden clasp. So that way it would stay open. So you have a space of one amma that was made over there between the end of the curtain, between the folded back end of the curtain and the wall. So it was pinned up over there so that the Kohen Gadol could walk in. The Tosfos Rid actually doesn't like that explanation because he says it doesn't seem respectful that it should stay pinned open all the time like that. So maybe for Rashi, we would say that they didn't have it pinned up like that all year round, only Yom Kippur. But anyway, the Tosfos Rid rather explains what it is that the curtain was hanging there in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or the two curtains were hanging over there. What they did is the end of the curtain that was the end of the curtain that was closer to the wall over there was pinned to the wall in different places. You had hooks on the wall over there, and then you had hooks on the wall, and then you had loops or laces or whatever from the end of the parechas that would attach to those hooks. So then what they did is on the bottom of it, with enough room for the Kohen Gadol to be walked in, then they left that part unpinned up so that the Kohen Gadol could easily push aside the unpinned part of the parochus and be able to go in. Anyway, the inner one was pinned up on the north side. So this way, we said yesterday that this way, when he enters the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he'll be entering on the north, which is how it should be, because the north is more important than the south. We see that Kodesh HaKodeshim are shechted davka on the north side of the Azara. But also a point is that this way, when he's walking, as we're going to continue in the Mishnah, that he walks alongside the parochas, inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim, this way his right side is facing towards the Aron, which is more respectful. If he went in from the south side, then his left side would be facing the Aron, and it would be less respectful. So the entrance into the Kodesh HaKodeshim was on the north. We said that according to Rabbi Yossi, that there was only one curtain, then the entrance to that one was also on the north. Okay, so continues the Mishnah. Mahalich b'nehen. So now the Kohen Gadol walks in. He goes in through the area, through that space on the south that's pinned up, or that's open for him. And then he starts walking between the curtains. So now he's walking the width of the Heichel and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And he's walking between them. And as he's walking along, the Yerushalmi points out, he would have to be holding the curtain open, the space that he's walking through. Remember, he's holding a pan of hot coals over there. We don't want him to set the curtain. We don't want him to set the parochas on fire. So therefore, as he's going along, he'd have to be using his elbows to push the curtain out as he's walking, so that he doesn't, so the machta doesn't get too close to the curtain. So he's walking between them, ad shemagiel atzafan, until he reaches the north, till he reaches the north wall. He giel atzafan, once he reaches the north wall, now he enters the Kodesh HaKadoshim, hoifich panav ladarim, now he turns his face towards the south, and mahalach l'smoyle ima parochas. He starts walking with his left side next to the parochas, and his right side now is facing towards the Aron. So he's not walking, in other words, he's not, once he comes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then he heads straight for the Aron. He's walking along the Parochas, so to speak, like a staying as far from the Aron as possible out of respect for the Aron. By the way, what is he using for light over here? The Yerushalmi actually brings that in the first Beis Mikdash, because we're going to talk about in the Gemara that only in the first Beis Mikdash did they have the Aron. So the Yerushalmi says the Aron gave off such a glow that in the first Beis Mikdash he was able to see very clearly what he's doing with the light from the Aron. In the second Beis Mikdash, once the Aron was hidden away, then you don't have that anymore. Then yeah, he'd kind of have to be feeling his way along. I mean, he had the coals with him. They gave off a little bit of light, I guess, but basically he had to feel his way around. So he'd walk along the parochas until adshu magila oron, until he reaches the oron, until he reaches the area in front of the oron. That is, the oron itself is in the middle of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or the Rambam and Hilchos Beis Abchira says that it was a little bit toward the west of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Whatever the case, you have there's the oron, you have the poles of the oron. Now the poles of the oron ran. The poles of the Aron ran along the short sides of the Aron. The short sides of the Aron, the Aron was 2.5 by 1.5 amas, and 1.5 amas tall. The poles of it were placed along the short sides, so that you have one pole towards the north and one pole. The Aron itself was placed with the long axis of it going north to south. So the poles also then, one pole was on the north side of the Aron, one on the south side. The ends of the poles therefore stuck out towards the east and towards the west. So you have, when you enter, and we're going to learn in the Gemara, on Daf Nun Daled, we're going to talk about that the poles were very, very long, the Derech Nes, they were very long, and they actually stuck out, they protruded out of the Parochas a little bit. So not really out, but whatever, they were visible from the outside of the parochas. So therefore, now the Kohen Gadol walks until the area next in front, behind the parochas. He's walking through the area between the poles of the Aron. So now he's directly in front of the Aron. He gia the Aron. Once he reaches the Aron, meaning the space in front of the Aron, noisen as a machta ben shnei abadim, then he puts down the pan of coals on the floor between the two badim, between the two poles of the Aron. And then the next thing is he has to put the ketores on it. So we talked about previously in the perek, we asked the question, does he now just pour the ketores from the spoon onto the coals, or does he actually have to get the ketores back into his hands? And we said that's what it is. He has to get the ketores back into his hands. And we said a few possibilities how he does it. He maneuvers it with his thumbs, or he rotates it with his, where he maneuvers it with his teeth. He rotates it with his elbows or knees. He flips it up in the air. Whatever the case, he gets the ketores into his hands. And then sober as a ketores agavet gecholim, he piles the ketores onto the coals, so it starts burning. V'nismale kol habayis kuloy oshan, and the entire room becomes filled with smoke. Which, as we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, that's when the pasuk says ki be'onan eroi ala kapodes, means that there has to be a cloud of smoke covering the kapodes, and when the Kohen Gadol is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's in fact now it's interesting. Usually, every day when ketores is brought, we don't find the necessity. The kohen doesn't necessarily have to stand there until the ketores starts smoking. He puts it on the fire, and then he's able to right away bow and leave. Why over here does he have to wait until the smoke comes? So there's an interesting explanation from a Velvel Brisker, and a follow up explanation on it. from Rav Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, that the making that smoke is actually part of the avoda itself, and therefore he can't just leave in the middle of the avoda. He has to wait until the smoke has happened, until the smoke has started coming up, till the room is filled with smoke, which is itself part of the avoda. And then also the going in and the coming out may be considered part of the avoda itself. And that's why we don't say that he bowed before he left the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because he's still in the process of his avoda until he actually leaves. Okay. Once he does that, Yotze Uvolei B'derech Beis Knisasei, then he leaves the Kodesh HaKadoshim the same way he came in. Meaning he doesn't turn around, because it would be disrespectful for him to turn his back to the Aron. Instead, he walks backwards and retraces his steps until he reaches the entrance, which were the pinned up part of the Parochus on the north side, and then he continues going out from there. If you look in the outer chamber, meaning in the Kodesh, he stands there and says a short tefillah to Hashem. And we'll learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, what the content of that short tefillah was. He would not take too long over that tefillah, in order not to scare the Jewish people, because they have no idea. Nobody's able to be in there. We learned previously, nobody's allowed to be even in the entire Heichel building while he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So they have no way of knowing whether he's alive in there or whether he died, like the Kohenim Gdolim who weren't on the level to be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, he would keep his tefillah short in order not to scare the Jewish people. So the Gemara starts off. Maya Skinner. Our Mishnah, the procedure that it describes in our Mishnah, which Beis HaMikdash is it referring to? Ilema B'Mikdash Rishon. Are you talking about it's explaining how he did things in the first Beis HaMikdash? Mi Havu Parechas. There were no two Parechas in that were saying that he has to go in through the south and walk between them and then go to the north. There was a wall there, as we said before, the Amatraxin. And okay, there was a Parechas in the middle of it, but fine. Then B'Pashtas, he just pulls that Parechas aside and goes in. There's none of this going to the south and going to the north. El of a Mikdash Sheni. So you're going to say it's talking about the second Beis HaMikdash. The problem is, mi hava aron? Was there an aron in the second Beis HaMikdash? So what are you saying that he went until the aron and put the pan of coals down between the poles of the aron? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, mishenignaz aron. Once the aron was hidden away, which we'll say soon when it was hidden away, nignaz imut sin senes amon, along with it was hidden away the jar of mon, which in Parashas B'Shalach, when it talks about the mon, it says Moshe tells Aaron, take an omer of mon and put it in a jar in order to show future generations what the Jewish people ate in the Midbar, which, by the way, we find Rashi mentions on the Pasuk from a Medrash that in Yirmiyahu's times, which was shortly before, we're going to say that this jar was hidden away shortly after that, but in Yirmiyahu's times, there were people saying, how are we able to learn Torah? We have to earn a living. So Yirmiyahu took out the jar of mon and showed them, and he said the same way as the Jewish people could rely on Hashem, they didn't have fields and businesses and whatever to run in the Midbar, and Hashem provided for everything they need. The same way you learn Torah and Hashem will provide for you. So that was hidden away with the Aron as well. With Sloichis Shemen HaMishcha, also the jar of Shemen HaMishcha, the jug of Shemen HaMishcha, which is what we learned earlier. We learned in Shkalim, and we learned earlier in the Masechta, that after that, the Kohenim Gdolim were not anointed with Shemen HaMishcha. They were only Merubah B'Godim. They would become Kohenim Gdolim by putting on the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol and doing Avoda. So that because the Shemen HaMishcha was hidden away with the Aron. Umakle shel Aron Ushkedeo Frecheha. Another thing that was hidden away was Aaron's staff with its almonds and its flowers. We have Parashas Korach, when the Jewish people are doubting the question of whether Aaron is really the one chosen by Hashem to do the Avodah. And each of the Nesiim puts a stick, each of the Nesiim gives a stick, and the sticks are all placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim in front of the Aaron, and only Aaron's stick blossomed. Tosfos Yeshanim over here mentions, by the way, now that the Pasuk says that the stick produced flowers and it produced almonds, but Tosfos Yeshanim says evidently what it is some of the flowers remained unripe. So you have some of them ripened and turned into almonds, as flowers usually do, and some of them remained as flowers. So that was also hidden. So that remained in front of the Aron. Hashem tells Moshe to put it back, tells Moshe to tell Aaron to put it back in front of the Aron. So it remained with the Aron. And when the Aron was hidden away, then so was it. and also the Argas Shashigru Plishtim Dodon Lelakei Yisrael, also the box of golden ornaments that the Plishtim sent as a present to Hashem. You have the story in Sefer Shmuel where the Plishtim captured the Aron, and then they started suffering all kinds of terrible diseases and plagues. And finally, after a few months, they decided we have no choice. We have to return the Aron. And their priests and magicians and whatnot, their religious people said to them, don't just return the Aron by itself. Give a present to Hashem as well, so that you recognize that Hashem brought all of these plagues on you, and that you're doing and that you're returning it out of respect for Hashem. So they were being attacked by mice, and they were having swellings and things all over their bodies. So therefore, they sent a box full of golden images of mice and golden images of swellings. So that box went along with the Aron, Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Uchlei hazahav asher ashevoisim loy," the golden ornaments that you're returning to him, asher ashevoisim loy Hashem, that you're giving Hashem as a guilt offering. Tassimu va'agas mitzidai, place them in a box. Place them in a box next to it. V'shilach the moisav aholach, and then you send off the Aron, and it'll go, and we'll see whether it goes back to Eretz Yisrael. The point is, in other words, they sent along a box with these golden ornaments, and from then on, that box remained next to the Aron. So therefore, when the Aron was hidden away, so was that box. Continues the Brayso. So umi gonzai, who hid away the Aron? And the answer is Yeshiyahu gonzai. Yeshiyahu hid it away. By the way, we learned earlier in our Masechta as well. We said at the end of the first parak that there were five things that were lacking in the second Beis Hamikdash that were present in the first Beis Hamikdash, and among them is the Aron together with the Kaparis and Kruvim and the Shemen HaMishcha and so on and so forth. Anyway, so Yeshiyahu hid it away about 30 and some years before Churban Bayis Rishon. So Ma Rosh gonzai. What did he see? What did he realize that he should hide it away? Rosh Hakosuv, he realized that it says in the pasuk, Yoylech Hashem Oischa Ves Malkacha Asher Tokem Olecha, Hashem will take you and your king that you set up over yourselves into Golus, which actually, by the way, we talked about the other day, how we mentioned the other day, how in Yoshio's time, they were renovating the Beis Hamikdash, and they found a Sefer Torah. Some of the Mefarshim say it was the original Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Others say they were excited to find any Sefer Torah because Menashe and Amon, the two kings before Yeshiyahu, had destroyed all Sefer Torah that they could get their hands on. Whatever the case, one explanation is in fact that when they opened up the Sefer Torah, they found it rolled to this very pasuk. So therefore, Yeshiyahu realized that this is a simen min hashamayim, that the Golos is coming very soon. So he was concerned that whoever takes the Jewish people into Golos then is going to take the Aron. Omad Begonzai, so therefore he went ahead and had it hidden away. Shenema, as the pasuk says, by Yomer LaLevim HaLevim L'Cho Yisrael HaKadoshim LaShem, he said to the Levim who knew Torah on behalf of the whole Jewish people, the ones who are holy for Hashem, he told them, Tznu es Aron HaKodesh, Babayis Hashabana Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael, place the holy Aron in the house which Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael built. And he continues, Ein lechem masa b'kosef. From now on, you have no mitzvah of carrying the Aron on your shoulders. Like we know, up until that point, when the Aron had to be carried from place to place, it would be carried by Kohenim and Levim. After Ivdu as Hashem Elokeichem as Am Yisrael, now serve Hashem and His people Yisrael. In other words, by doing this job with the Aron Kodesh. Now, what do you mean place the Aron Kodesh in the house that Shlomo built? It's been in the house that Shlomo built for the last 300 odd years. So what it means is almost 400 years. So it means take it from the Kodesh HaKadoshim and build it in the other house and put it rather in the other house in the tunnels under the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo built. So the Rambam describes based on the Gemara over here and further on, also we learned this in Shkalim, that Shlomo built winding tunnels under the Beis HaMikdash, because he knew Beruach HaKodesh that one day the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. So this way they could deposit the Aron there for safekeeping and nobody would ever find it. We're actually going to mention in the Gemara later on, and we learned to describe them as well, a machloikus, whether in fact that was the case or whether the Aron was in the end captured and taken to Babel. But we're going over here, according to the Gemara over here, is the Brais over here is saying that it was hidden away. And there's actually a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the idea that you could say that, in other words, that there's two places where the Aron can legitimately be in order to make the Beis Hamikdash have the din of the Beis Hamikdash. One is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and one is underground below it. So therefore, he's telling them to place the Aron in the second place that was set up for it to begin with, namely these tunnels. Anyway, so there we know that the Aron was hidden away. What about these other things, the jar of Mon and the Shemen HaMishcha and so forth? But Amar Rabbi Elazar says, we know that all those other things went together with the Aron because Asya Shama Shama, we learn Xeda Shava on the word Shama. By the Aron, it says, Asher Yivoreh Lecha Shama. The jar of Mon, it also says, the Sen Shama Maloi HaOmer Mon. So therefore, so we see that the jar of Mon went along with it as well. Then the Asya Dodus. In turn, then we learn from the word, we learn from one thing where it says Dodus to another where it says Dodus. By the jar of Mon, it says that it should be the Dodus Seichem. By the Shemen HaMishcha, it also says it should be the Dodus Seichem. So therefore, it means they go together. And the Asya Mishmeres, Mishmeres. And we learn also on the word Lamishmeres, where it says by the Mon, it says Lamishmeres L'Dere Seichem, and by the staff of Aaron, it also says Lamishmeres L'Ois L'Vnei Meri. So therefore, so we learn that all of those things went together with it. We don't have a pasuk that shows that the box that the Plishtim sent went along with the Aron, but perhaps just the idea is it was sent along with the Aron in the first place, and therefore as a gift to Hashem, and therefore it belongs together with the Aron. In fact, the Gemara in Bava Basra brings an opinion, we learned in Yerushalmi Shkolim as well, that there's an opinion that the Sefer Torah that was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was placed on top of that box. Anyway, so therefore, the point is that the Aron and all those things were hidden away. So for the last 30-odd years of the first Beis Hamikdash and the whole second Beis Hamikdash, there was no Aron in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But again, we're saying only in the second Beis Hamikdash were there two Parei Chasin, because in the first one, you didn't need. So when the Mishnah describes that the Kohen Gadol went between the two Parei Chasin and came in front of the Aron, doesn't seem to fit with either the first or the second Beis Hamikdash. So the answer is La'olam HaMikdash Sheni. In fact, we are talking about the second Beis Hamikdash. Umay higia la'aron. What does it mean? When the Mishnah says he reached the Aron, means makom Aron, means he reached the place where the Aron would have been. Okay, but what about Barkatani Nasan Asamachta Lebein Shnei Abadim? What about, though, the Mishnah continues that he placed the pan of coals between the two Badim, which implies that the Badim are there. And the answer is, again, Ema Kibbein Shnei Abadim. What it means is he placed it in the spot where, if the Aron were still there, then it would be between the Badim. But because of the second Beis Hamikdash, there's no Aron over there, and therefore, but he placed it on that same spot on the floor. Okay, we said in the mission at Tzavar HaSakturis HaGabi, we called him. Then he piled the Keturis on the coals. So Tznan Commander Amat Sovra. Therefore, it shows that our Mishnah is going according to the opinion that says that he piled it, which in fact, there's a machlokes about that. Whether he piled it in a thick pile or whether he spread it thinly. We talked about this the other day. On the one hand, we could say we want him to make a thick pile of it so that it will take time for the smoke to start coming, and this way he won't suffocate. On the other hand, we could say he wanted to spread it more thinly so it will start smoking right away, and that way he won't be gazing at around the Kodesh HaKadoshim where the Shekhinah is there. So our Mishnah is going according to the opinion that he piled it. So now within that, Tony Chodat Sovra Pnimashi Chotzaloi, one Braisa says he would pile it beginning from the inside, meaning the area that's outside relative to him. In other words, according to that opinion, he would start putting it from his hands on the far end of the Machta, the end that's further away from him, the end that's closer to the Aron, and then continue going and then continue bringing his hands closer and closer to himself. Another Braisa says the other way around, he would start from the outside, which is the inside of him. In other words, he'd start from near him, from the end of the Machta, closer to him, and work his way outward. Amar Abaye Tanoi. So Abaye says, yeah, in fact, it is evidently a machlokas Tanoi. But Amar Abaye, and also Abaye says, Mistabra Commander Omar Pnimashi Chotzaloi. It's more logical to say that we should follow the opinion that he started from the inside, the side of the Machta that's closer to the Aron, which is further away from him. And then he works his way towards his body. D'tanan, because we have, when it comes to the Ketodos every day, the Mishnah and Talmud says, Melamden Oise, they would teach the Kohen, where we learned in the second parak of Amasecha, that Ketodos that was brought every day, in general, you had a new Kohen bringing it, who never brought it before, Chadoshim L'Ketodos, so therefore he's not familiar with the procedure, so they would tell him, Melamden Oise, he's Zohar, Shalei Taskom Panecha, be careful that you don't start putting the Ketodos on the coals directly in front of you, Shemati cover, because you might get burnt. Because in other words, what's going to happen? You're going to put the ketodos on the coals that are closer to you, and then you're going to be reaching out further and further away from you. The hot smoke coming up from it could end up burning you. So be careful you don't do that. So therefore, they would tell him to do just that. You start from the far end of the Mizbeach HaZahav and work your way back in. So therefore, says Abaye, it's more logical to say it's the same thing by the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, Tosfos says that, on the other hand, you don't really need the, so once you have that, why do we have to say Mistabra? It seems pretty clear from that that you have to do it. But okay, there could be a difference that maybe you don't have to worry about such a minor thing, or maybe that the brises we brought before are not known to be accurate brises, so therefore we brought one that's more clear. But also the point is, though, some of the Mephoshim say, listen, I mean, the coals that he brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim were already cooled off a little bit. The ones for the Ketodos every day, you bring them from the Mizbeach HaChitzen directly onto the Mizbeach HaPnimi and place them over there, and then right away the Ketodos is poured on them. Whereas over here, we said before, the coals were sitting there for a while on the fourth row of stones in the Azara, and only afterwards did he bring it in. So therefore, it's cooler. So therefore, it's not necessarily that we have to do it this way, but it's more logical that they did it this way as well. One point is also that if it weren't for that, we would have said Ein ma'avir na'al mitzvahs, don't bypass a mitzvah, start from as closer as possible to you. But again, Abaye is saying the fact that there's the possibility of him getting burnt is reason enough for him to do it differently and start from the far end.